Hi, everybody. This is Jamal here, the Buddhist. Just wanted to provide a warning at the start of this episode that during this episode, I give a personal anecdote that touches on themes of suicide and mental health concerns. If anybody does hear that, or if anybody in general is feeling like this is an issue for you and you would need some support, please call Lifeline Australia on 13 11 14 or SMS 0477 131114. If you do feel like this is particularly problematic for you, you can skip this episode and come back to us next week. Or if you would like to listen to this episode but skip that section, maybe just stop listening after we tell the joke. Please enjoy the rest of the episode. Thanks. Welcome to A Christian and a Buddhist Walk into a Bar. My name is Jamal and I'm a Buddhist.
I'm Jacob. I'm working hard at being a Christian.
Good to see you
getting
working.
Shelter from the rain.
Yeah, or something like that.
Father, Son, set to carry. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, okay. Working hard to be Christian.
That's it. He got there, ladies and gentlemen. He got there.
So someone has to have done that, right?
I don't think they have.
So this is not a Divine Music episode. This is not a Divine Music episode.
Although that would be an interesting Divine Music song.
That's true.
Actually.
Yeah. Shelve that for another time. We're talking about work today. I think you walked in here when we started this session. I was like, head in hands, just like I've had this hellish 48 hours at work.
There was a bit of grief going on.
There was a bit of grief going on. Girls. But even still, I felt like I could bring my spiritual self to work.
What does that look like for you? Do you write four letters on the top of the page?
Something like that. We have an article today here from The Guardian and Jackie Bailey called How Do You Bring Your Spiritual Self to Your Job and Make Sure You're Doing More Good Than Harm? And look, I don't know that there is a heap of depth in this article.
I don't know that she entirely answers the question, to be honest.
No, it's true. But I think it's a good launching point, and it's a good kind of musing on, I guess, a topic that is close to our heart, close to this podcast, which is, you know, how do you intersect your work and your spiritual life? How do you make sure your work is connected with your spiritual life? And I'm going to hazard a guess and say that for Jacob, this is pretty easy for you.
Is it?
Well, I don't. You tell if your work is not bringing your spiritual self.
Oh, you mean for me individually? Yeah.
If you're not bringing your spiritual self to work, Jacob, I don't think you're doing your job properly.
Well, and there is an argument that some people seem to hold the view that like the most spiritual job that you can do is to be a pastor or a priest or whatever, Frankly, I've got no truck with that. Like, I would kind of not be a pastor if I could help it in some ways. I've had that advice, actually. Sorry, we're tangenting already. But if you can do anything other than being a pastor, you should do that. Like,
yeah, right.
with the idea being that it's only if it's like, yeah, this is really, I'll be frustrated with myself if I don't do this.
So what you're saying is you're a failure.
Sure.
No, you're not a failure. You're the least failure.
We won't talk about the last project I worked on in my former job.
But no, so that's interesting, right? So yeah, like I think for you, it's obviously very apparent, right? You are a pastor. Your whole job is to bring your spiritual self to work. I think, you know, for the purposes of this article, I think it's fairly one-to-one. But like, what about for the rest of us lay people? How do we bring our spiritual selves into our workplaces when our workplaces are not houses of God?
Well, and I think the very like the answer is kind of in the question, right? Like there's a bit of a secular sacred divide that we have in modern Western culture that in my view is a bit of a sham that's been foisted upon us. And like, why not pray at work? And like, you don't need to be, you know, happy clappy ostentatious about it. In fact, Jesus says don't be ostentatious about it, right? But like, I've got friends who working in like, you know, major policy areas, right? This is Canberra. There's lots of public servants in this town.
No, I'm sorry, there are no public servants here. We are all just miners
Okay, and we go kayaking on the lake. Correct. Rowing on the lake. Yeah, sorry. Correct. Rowing is what you do on the lake.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So lots of public servants in Canberra. So lots of people working on policy, right? And like, so I know some of them will pray for the people whose policies are going to be affecting them, right? Yeah. Like to me, that's just a open and shut bringing your spirituality to work kind of thing, right? Like one example.
Yeah. And so this article goes into a little bit of the Buddhist idea around this, which I think is an important thing for me to talk about, which is right livelihood, which is actually one of the parts of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right. Yeah. And you know, so Buddhism is very, very explicit about this, right? It says that if you are to follow the Buddhist path, you need a right livelihood. You need a way of employment and a way of earning your daily bread that does keep in line with the teachings, you know. So, mm-hmm. you know, it.
So there are some jobs that are better or worse.
Right. Than others, yeah. Right? Yeah. And again, like everything in Buddhism, it's all contextual and comparative, right? Like, what is right livelihood? It's a livelihood that aligns with the rest of the Eightfold Path. So you kind of have to read the rest. But, like, yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, you know, I think the examples used here are, you know, don't traffic in people, weapons, or poisons, right? Like, sure. don't.
So running a brothel, bad idea.
Well, and again, I. Not inherently, because I think sex work is a legitimate form of work that isn't always involved in people trafficking. Now, running a people trafficking brothel is a bad idea, but, you know, running a brothel where all the sex workers are consensually engaging there and getting, you know, fairly paid for it, I don't think would actually clash with the right livelihood in Buddhism, right? But, you know, selling guns absolutely would. Right. So going, I'm just going to, you know, go and, you know, sell, be an arms dealer and sell to militants who are trying to kill people.
But selling guns to clay pigeon shooters.
Potentially would be okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have the broader conversation about like the systemic stuff. About right. Do the guns that go to the people shooting clay pigeons, does that affect the whole arms industry globally? Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
If exactly.
A tree falls in the forest, which is the same conversation with the brothel, right? Like, does that affect an over hyper-sexualized society? Sure. And yeah, is that a blah, blah, blah.
But yeah, I think the other one I think is kind of important to call out in the right livelihood discussion, though, is this idea of yeah, it is contextual, right? And that it does depend on your interpretation of things. So, you know, in countries like Thailand and Sri Lanka and some of these very Buddhist countries, actually, it's, you know, all the people who work in butcheries are generally of minority groups that are not Buddhist, because it's not right livelihood as a Buddhist to go and kill animals, right?
Yeah.
Because that's very much against the Buddhist teaching. And yet lots of Buddhists will eat animals.
So this is partly why, just as another little tangent, partly why Jews end up running banks in medieval Europe, right?
Because can't
Christians
money.
Can't lend at interest. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly right, yeah.
Or Muslims, for that matter.
Yeah, no, Muslims definitely can't lend at interest, right, yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting kind of take on, you know, I guess the broad Buddhist path, but I think what it all comes back down to is that, the Buddhist path is a path that encapsulates your whole life, right? Yep. There is no part of your life that is exempt from the teachings.
And likewise with Christianity, right? Like there's no part of your day that God is not part of, whether you're aware of that or not, right?
Mm, yeah. Well, and I think this goes to something that I think is a bit of a misnomer in society, which I think maybe leads us away from being able to properly engage with this question, you know, and actually do bring our spiritual selves to lives fully. Spiritual lives to our work fully, rather,
sure.
Is that the kind of the falsehood of work-life balance and the separation of work and life, and going, well, there is work and there is life. And I'm never usually one to recommend a TV show, but if anyone hasn't seen Severance, it explores that in an amazing way.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it gives this way in the first episode, so it's not really a spoiler, but like, you know, in Severance, the kind of the broad premise of the show is that people have been severed and they have essentially their work selves and their non-work selves, and they are not actually connected. And so, so, you know, you don't have any memories of your life outside of work when you're your work self, and you don't have many memories of your work when you're your life self.
How do you small talk at work?
You should watch the show and find out. Yeah. But yeah, it is a really interesting kind of concept. And I think that really lends itself into this, where it's saying, well, no, my personal life should be very separate from my work life. But I think what that leads to is, well, my personal morals and ethics shouldn't play a role in my work.
Which is part of the like secular private public split, right? Like, you know, you don't talk about religion or politics in polite company kind of thing, right? Like, and especially in this town, right? Like, you technically you can't have politics at work, right? Like, that's how it works the capital where most people work for the Commonwealth government, right?
Yeah.
You have to leave your politics at the door. That's how it goes. But I think that plays into what you're talking about, like that kind of, well, values, that's fine that you've got your own personal values and whatever. But while you're here, you're on our values and that's how it goes.
Right. Yeah. And I think fundamentally, as a Buddhist, you just can't do that.
Well, like as a person, you just can't do that. This is a like a conceit of society that originally was supposed to stop religious tensions and this kind of stuff, but has gone a bit overboard.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, is there that teaching in Christianity in the same way that like you kind of have to bring God into your work life in order to be a good Christian? Because it's certainly there in Buddhism.
Well, like it's kind of, it's maybe not there explicitly purely because, you know, first century Roman Empire doesn't have the concept of work and employment and stuff that we do. But it's all through the New Testament in this idea that Jesus is Lord, right? Like, and if Jesus is Lord, then Jesus is Lord of everything. Like, where Lord has a sense of, like, it's the same word for the head of a household as it is for Caesar and the emperor, right? Like, so it's kind of, if Jesus is the head of your household, then Jesus is, like, that's a work thing because you do your work in the household if you're a slave or if you're whatever.
We moved on from it, but I do want to go back to the kind of the concept of like the expectation of leaving your religious life outside of work.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Because I just think that's deeply fascinating because I think what employers are often asking people to do there is almost to give up their own sense of values and morality, right? And to not abide, you know, by what they believe to be the right way to do things inherently. And just abide by the way that the company or the organization believes that they should do things, right?
Do you think that's symptomatic in a way of a kind of cultural, not necessarily absence, but hollowing out of a shared sense of meaning and purpose and what it means to be human? Like, because we see activist corporations in things like, you know, same-sex marriage or like that kind of the stuff that businesses, I don't know, would ever have previously got involved in, but because the values that a business holds is now so important for how they sell themselves to staff as much as to customers.
Well, I think it's related to me to the hollowing out of any kind of value system outside of capitalism at all, right? That the idea that your work self, that who you are as an employee and a taxpayer and whatever else is actually the most important version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And that actually, you know, I mean, and again, I don't think it would be surprised anyone from Canberra to say this, but like Canberra is a work obsessed city.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, not only
100%.
Right. Like I have a theory, a running theory that you can tell a lot about a town or a city based on what the first question you ask a stranger is.
Mm-hmm.
The first question you ask a stranger in Canberra is, right, yeah, what department, what do you do for work, right? Like, that is just a thing. And everybody, I think, identifies themselves personally with their work.
Yeah.
And look, I am a fan
To go to what she's written in the article, am I doing more harm than good?
Mm.
Like, that comes down to, like, it's really important to choose the right workplace then, to have one that where you feel that aligns with your values and you're doing more good than harm.
Right, but I just think that's the wrong way around, though, right? Like, I think you absolutely should try and do more good than harm, and you should choose a workplace that is contributing to something you care about. You know, as a Buddhist, I'm not going to go work for an arms manufacturer, or I'm not going to go work for, you know, some people selling poisons in places, or you know, I'm not going to go be a butcher because like they do not align with my values. But I also think that it shouldn't be a thing that once I've made that one decision that then my entire values as a person should be dictated by my workplace, right? Like,
100%.
Yeah, and I just think that there's this kind of narrowing of ourselves that aligns with our work selves, right? And it is just this sense of like, you know, you can't, I know people, again, in Canberra Public Service City, I know people who as private citizens won't do certain things because it doesn't align with their public service values, yeah. right? And, you know, there are explicit instructions in the public service kind of codes and whatever else that say you can be a private citizen and do what you want. And yet they go, oh,
just
no.
Just don't do it on Twitter.
Right, yeah. But
we see you, Greg Jericho. Yeah.
I have a friend who, even before they became a public servant, was like, you know, was an economist and went, well, I can't vote because if I vote, that would mean that I am essentially picking a side, and as an economist who's like working in the academia of, you know, the Australian economy, I need to, you know, neutrally assess every side, and I can't bias my ability to neutrally assess all
economics. This is literally why voting is a private activity
right.
in a booth where nobody can see what you wrote but or didn't write on the sheet.
But his
right?
argument like, is not that he shouldn't vote because people would know, it's because he would know. And that he would bias his own economic analysis.
That is such an economist.
By voting. Right, exactly right. This is a thing. And it's like, and look, I mean, this is one of my dearest friends. I have a lot of respect for this person. But also, like, that's just taking it a bit far. Like, it's just kind of going like, you know, yeah, I really am, you know, so valuing who I am as my work that I'm going to compromise any concept of personal value I have or any preference I have to a political mm-hmm. leanings one way or the other, because I just don't want to, you know, I just don't want to bias my work.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, like, I think this article does a good job of saying, like, there is another way here, right? There is a way where you can bring your spiritual values to your work and try and integrate the two.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. And then you maybe don't have that problem as well of, I need to censor my private self because of my work self. It's like, well, if the two are kind of aligned in some way, like there might be good reasons to, just as there's good reasons to censor yourself in a work conversation, right? Like if you're negotiating with somebody else over a contract or whatever, like you're not going to tell them everything that you might otherwise tell them and that kind of thing. Like,
right, yeah. And I think there's I'll say for myself at least, I don't censor myself that much at work at all. I actually bring my personal self to work significantly more than I think I perceive other people around me do. And I actually think I'm better at my job for it, right? Because I think, you know, in most jobs, right, in most jobs that are not, say, data crunchy, you know, purely quantitative jobs, interpersonal connection and genuineness actually is a major deal. Right?
Oh, even in some of those kind of jobs, right?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Like your ability to do your job is very dependent on your ability to connect with people. And you can connect with people best through genuineness and through actually, you know, engaging with people.
According to the research, if I focus on relationships and authenticity, my workplace can become an arena for genuine, heartfelt growth and connection.
Right.
In the article with a link to, I clicked the link.
Yeah.
It is a 62-page document. And I read the exec sum where they said, we tested all these hypotheses about, like, this is a good thing. And we found them all to be true. So there you go.
There you go, yeah.
I read the exec sum, so you don't have to.
Great.
Yeah, go on.
No.
Do you reckon, though, that there are, like, you've mentioned kind of butchering and arms dealing. Arms dealing's got a few mentions on the podcast. Like, are there jobs that are inherently better or worse? That, like, clearly there's some that are worse, but is there a spectrum, or is there just a don't do and is okay buckets?
Number one, monk.
Right, gotcha.
Right. Like,
because this is the thing, right? Like, yeah, I feel like the article falls into a couple of those kind of conceits. Like I mentioned before, that there are some people that think that just a pastor is the most holy work that you can do, and the article here mentions doctors and nurses, and like they're saving lives, and how much more valuable is their work than my, you know, freelance journalism?
Right. And look, I think it's a, you know, it's a misnomer question. I gave a silly answer, right? But like, yeah, I think, you know, in the same way with Christianity, right? There are some versions that say, well, you know, teaching the Dharma is the number one thing you can do, right? If you can sure. be a monk and go learn and teach the Dharma, that's the best possible thing you can sure. do. But yeah, there are other...
Well, and it gets you closer to enlightenment. So if that's the goal rather than thinking right. of a broader social right. something.
Well, unless you're also you're a bodhisattva and your broader social goal is to actually lead to the enlightenment of everybody.
Sure.
Right. So that's also a path to take, right? But yeah, I think there is a there's a more nuanced view that does also say, you know, well, no, actually there is no better job. It's actually about how you do your job, right? Like mm-hmm. you could be a real dickhead monk and be doing a lot worse than being the kindest, most Buddhist, arms dealer, right? Yeah. You sell people guns, but they all have rubber bullets and they're fake. And yeah, something like that, right? But yeah, like, so I think...
And there's definitely people who should not be doctors,
right?
Like, they don't have the gifting, the aptitude for it.
Right, absolutely, yeah. Right, yeah. And I think that's I think this is the problem with capitalism and the problem with the kind of the version of the world that really pushes you to A, care about the wealth side of things and B, really just, you know, care about the identity side of things with your work, is that you don't have the capacity to, you know, we don't pick our doctors based on who is the kindest, right? Mm-hmm. There have been studies where they show that if you do a poll of first year medical students and you ask them, why are you a doctor? Like, why are you here, right? Yep. It's something like 50 to 60% of them say, I want to help people, right?
Yep. And the other 40% are like, pretty good money.
Pretty good money, yep. Or like prestige or whatever, right?
Yep. Mum, dad made me.
Yeah. Yep. And if you poll people in their seventh year of medical school, 80% of people are saying prestige or money.
That's interesting.
You lose all of the people who are there to help people because it's just so grueling and so, like, you know, that's not what they're testing for, right? They're training people to be cold, calculated, you know, assessors of your diagnostic tools, right?
Can I run past you then my theory of what happens in the public service in this town? Is that some people come here because, like, it's an easy path to, you know, a job with a consulting firm or, you know, law firm back in Sydney or whatever. But a whole bunch of people come here and get jobs in the public service because they generally want to serve the public and, you know, make Australia great again, right? Like, make things better for people. And that over the course of 5 years, maybe 10 if you're just really solid, it just gets beaten out of you because you see how much of a grind it is to make change and how governments are all over the place and whatever. And that that hopefulness and that optimism kind of just turns into a cynicism and here we go. Like, that's kind of my working theory on Canberra.
Well, and I think the flip side of that is you look at the natural tendency of people to come and go from Canberra, and that's about the same timeline, right? Like, I think you either have people that get it beaten out of them and then just become a bit cynical, or you get people who leave.
Yeah, and go join an NGO or something. Do something or whatever. Else,
right? Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a again, my unifying theory of all cities. I also think every city has a unifying value under it, right? And I think you know that whole what question you ask tells you a lot about that value.
Totally.
And actually, can you guess what I think Canberra's value is?
No, hit me.
Comfort.
Yeah.
I think the unifying value of Canberra is comfort, and that's not a judgment call, but I think that most people in Canberra are looking for and happy with and want to pursue a life of some relative comfort. And I think that's kind of the result of that grind, then the result of that, because the only way I think to survive that kind of the bureaucratic churn is to seek comfort in small things in your own life.
And to be able to get away every couple of weeks to the beach or the snow or whatever.
To have a hobby that you love to do that you're obsessed with and that's a really nice thing for you.
Yeah.
To have
and flex time is great for that. You know?
To have a white picket fence and, you know, a few kids and a dog and all those kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's fascinating. Good.
Yeah. But I think that's tied in, right? I think that's tied in with the work obsession, right? Because, again, what is the thing that facilitates that comfort? It's the golden handcuffs. It's the fact that you have a job that you effectively have tenure and you're on six figures for your whole life as soon as you've done a few years, and that's just it.
Yeah. Throwback to Basil the Great, who says that rich people don't mind handcuffs as long as they're golden.
Right, exactly.
We didn't talk about that in the episode that we just recorded on Basil the Great, but he talks about this, how you end up being in bondage to wealth. And it, well, I guess we touched on this a little bit, it makes you do things, and work kind of can be the same thing, right? Like it's, oh, I didn't really want to, but I had to. It's like, well, no, you didn't. You could have quit your job.
Yeah, right? You absolutely could have done any of that, right? Yeah, yeah. Do you, as a pastor, do people talk to you about work a lot?
Yeah.
What do they say?
Not often enough.
Without giving away any confidences, right? Like, what do they say about work?
Part of it is whether they're enjoying it or not. Part of it is the meaning thing. Like, as I mentioned, you know, praying about work and this kind of stuff. And this, like, kind of brings me to another thing in the that frustrated me a little in this article, right? Is she talks about how I can, in an organization, I'm brought into close daily contact with people I had to get along with, even if I didn't particularly like them, nor them, me. And so there's a reaction with coworkers and that kind of thing. Actually, sometimes we'll talk about and pray about stuff that's going on with people's coworkers and this kind of stuff. But when you see that as the only way you can bring your spirituality to your work, I think you're missing something. And I think it's something that we commonly miss. Like, you know, I know people who will pray for their coworkers, but not pray for the, like, they just hadn't even thought of praying for the people who are affected by their work or whatever.
And I think
that's just such a smaller scope of who I am at work. Yeah.
That ties in with that supremacy of work, right? Where it's like, yeah, I another part of that article that reminded me of was, yeah, which she talks about, like, oh, I share my love with my colleagues through baking or whatever else and cooking for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's perceived that you can't challenge the supremacy of the job. So even if the job is a job that isn't ethical or isn't providing you a chance to bring your spiritual self, then the way you do it is by being nice to the people around you and being a nice person at work. But, oh, no, we couldn't possibly challenge the principles of this organization and what this organization is trying to do, you know. And, yeah, it's a weird kind of thing where it's like, well, hold on, isn't bringing your spiritual self to work, wouldn't it be if you see your employer acting unethically?
Yep.
And not in line with your religion, shouldn't you then maybe try and call out and change the behaviors of your employer rather than just being nice to your colleagues when you're all crying over the fact that you've, you know, yay, secured another, you know, another shipment of bombs?
Well, and they're part of the conversations that I have as well, right? Like, which is not just like, how do you challenge the things in the workplace or whatever, but also like, how do you, like, I mean, this is just fundamentals of being human, right? But like, how do you not get caught up in, like, you know, my boss is putting all this pressure on me to get this thing done that's not really that important, or it's, you know, I'm not paid enough to do whatever. Like, how do you push back on that, and how do you engage well in that space? And what do you do if you see someone bullied and this kind of thing?
Yeah. Reminds me of the time a Christian and Buddhist walked into a bar.
No, was the bartender at work?
The bartender was
at work. Did they bring all of their spiritual self to the bar?
No, they didn't. But they were they walked into the bar, and their old mate Nasruddin was there, and
he always brings all of himself to everything.
He does bring all of himself to everything, and you know there were people working at the bar, and it was a band. It was a it was a concert, you know, and they were rocking out. It was like it was kind of a little bit of a heavy band. And yeah, they go up to Nasruddin and go, yeah, who's playing? Like, yeah, these guys are pretty cool. And Nasruddin goes, oh, yeah, no, the band's called Reincarnation. And they go, oh, yeah, awesome. And they're like, you know, are they new? Like, yeah, do they have albums? They're like, oh, yeah.
No, they're on their comeback tour.
Hey! Yes! They're making a comeback. Where it was going. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that was great. Can I throw one more thing at
you, please.
Out of this article? The something that just ground my gears a bit was the it's the classic what if, but you know, if I was sending a spaceship to go populate another planet, and she says I'd put my sister the doctor or my other sister on the nurse, like they'd get a spot on the spaceship. And right up top, it's if I have the privilege to choose what I do for a living, then I must constantly check in with myself that I'm doing more good than harm. And to me, that just sounds like you're putting so much weight on this.
Yeah.
And the constant checking in and the, like, am I doing not just am I doing more good than harm is a kind of nice way to put it, but the spaceship things tends to lend itself more towards am I doing the best thing that I possibly could. And I feel like we have this tendency with work to make the perfect kind of the enemy of the good enough,
right,
in a lot of ways. And yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to make a judgment call about are you doing good in the world, right? And sure. I think you definitely...
Like, I'm not against doing good in the world, just to be completely clear.
But,
yeah.
But I think there's an inherent short-termism to that thinking.
Yeah.
Where you go, well, the doctor's saving lives, the nurse is saving lives. The teacher is like educating the next generation now.
Mm-hmm.
And this author who's a journalist goes, well, I'm a journalist. What do I do? Mm. Right. Well, journalists have a long history of changing political regimes or like, you know, yeah. And like, sure, it's slow. It's a longer view of things, but like, you know,
you might not be explicitly doing that yourself, right, but you're kind of enabling a profession that does.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's a little bit of there's a bit of a short-term thing. It reminds me of this time in my life, actually, when like, you know, this is an interesting story to remember. I was young, right? Let's just contextualize this by saying...
I've seen photos of you with hair.
Yeah. Let's just contextualize this by saying I was young. I had a long history of mental health issues.
Yep.
I would not think this of myself now. And if anybody does think this of themselves, I would genuinely ask you to find ways to identify some help you can get. But there was a point in my life where I was really reflecting on what I wanted to do with my life. I had gone and left high school and gone and started doing music theater, which was very self-serving, right? I think theater and entertainment can be very beneficial to the world. But, you know, I will be honest with you, a lot of people I know who do theater and a lot of, well, me doing theater even, and a lot of people I know who do theater, it is because I like to perform and I like the applause and
makes me feel good about myself.
It's a self-serving profession for lots of people, not everybody.
So one of those ones that's difficult to do in that spiritual self,
right?
Way,
yeah, but you can.
You can, but you it's can. Difficult. It's hard, yeah.
And I was reflecting on that and I was going, do I really want to keep doing this, right? And part of that reflection was, you know, well, I want to help the world. Like I want to contribute, so whatever else. And, you know, in my very over-the-top, very not particularly healthy way when I was, you know, 19 years old, I wrote myself a contract. And in my contract to myself, I said, well, you know, actually what I need to be doing is constantly be doing the most I can possibly do to help the world, right?
Oh,
and like, dude. And you, to be fair, there was caveats. It was like, it's not like I have to go and do the most anyone could possibly do, right?
No,
it was
like you could
the
do.
Most that
yeah,
I
yeah.
could do. So given my current situation and my current abilities, I need to go and do the most I can possibly do in the world. And I had a clause in that contract that said that if I was ever at any point not doing the most I could do in the world, and I observed that, then I had essentially 6 months to change that or I should go kill myself. And it was particularly bad. And it was kind of like, and again, that is not a healthy thing to do, right?
And if you're wrestling with any of that kind of stuff, Lifeline 13, 11, 14.
Yes, absolutely. And, yeah, and we'll put something at the top of this podcast for that as well. But like, you know, That's the unhealthy version of where this obsession leads, right? Is that my vocation, that my participation in work in the world must be the be-all and end-all of all of my self-worth and value. And if I'm not doing some major contribution, then, you know, then I am a worthless human being who shouldn't live, right?
It kind of comes back to that meaning vacuum in a way.
Right, exactly right. And it's like, and so, you know, yeah, deeply unhealthy, deeply problematic, but like, you know, that's where I think some of these really, really bad attitudes can lead you, right? Where it's like, and this short-term thinking, it's not about what I can do right here, right now. And if you can do something good right here, right now, please do. Like,
yep.
Absolutely do it. But don't judge yourself purely based on that metric and look at the bigger picture, right? I have a job now where I am not actually... I have one of those defined bullshit jobs, right, where you can't really describe what it is to anybody. And
my grandfather would not approve.
Right, yeah, and I don't do anything tangible, right? But I'm changing systems.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm contributing.
I would say you're doing things that are tangible.
We can talk about that later, yeah. But like I'm trying to change systems and I'm making broad positive contributions to the world by looking at long-term change. And the impacts of what I do now are not going to be felt for generations, right? But I'm so much happier doing that than even when I was, you know, off the back of that kind of thinking had went overseas and, you know, built houses in the Philippines, yep. right? Like, you know, like that. It's there are so many ways you can contribute. So like, you absolutely, please contribute, but don't get stuck in that short-term thinking.
And I think this is the big thing for me that Christianity brings to our lens of work, right? Mm. Is that our work is not ultimate, right? Mm. Like it doesn't define who we are.
Yeah.
And actually something that I think I've found really helpful, but I think is just helpful in general, is the concept of forgiveness in work, like in life in general, but in work. And I think it's astonishingly freeing to go, do you know what? You are going to stuff up and you're going to mess something up, and maybe it's not going to be that bad, but maybe it's going to be catastrophic. Like we're imperfect human beings. As you were saying, like, you know, you can't do the best good that you could possibly be doing all the time. It's just not going to happen.
Mm.
And because God has forgiven you, you can forgive yourself.
Mm.
And therefore you can also forgive others when they make major stuff ups.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, someone who doesn't need any forgiveness is Kevin MacLeod.
He certainly does. He needs me to press the play button.
He does. Kevin MacLeod is great. He gives us royalty-free music. Never needs to be forgiven for that. And neither would you need to be forgiven for sharing this podcast with a friend.
We'll let the friend decide. But please, please do that. Like and subscribe, guys. You can get in touch with us at christianbuddhistbar@gmail.com. We'd love your thoughts, ramble suggestions, articles, whatever. Send them through. We'll see you next week.
I'll see you at work.
I thought you were going to... See you next week.